Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is breaking with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and calling for new elections in that country. Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish official in U.S. history and a top advocate for Israel in the Senate, described Netanyahu's government as an obstacle for peace. Here's NPR's Eric McDaniel.
Speaking on the Senate floor, Schumer said that Netanyahu has lost his way. He condemned the Hamas attacks and called for an immediate release of all hostages. But after tens of thousands of civilian deaths in Gaza, he said it was time for Israel to make some serious course corrections and named four major obstacles to a lasting peace.
Hamas and the Palestinians who support and tolerate their evil ways. Radical right-wing Israelis. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
He says Netanyahu has bowed to extremists, co-opted the judiciary, and put his own political survival before the best interests of Israel. Schumer said a new election in Israel is the only way to move forward. Eric McDaniel, NPR News, Washington.
Today, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell fired back.
Only Israel's citizens should have a say in who runs their government.
And on the social media platform X, Israeli Ambassador Michael Herzog said, commenting on the domestic political scene of a Democratic ally is counterproductive. Manhattan prosecutors say they're open to delaying former President Donald Trump's hush money trial by 30 days to allow a review of new records. This criminal trial is currently scheduled to begin in about 2 weeks. The GOP's presumptive presidential nominee is accused of falsifying business records to conceal damaging information to influence the 2016 presidential vote. He has pleaded not guilty to the charges. Steven Mnuchin, who served as Treasury Secretary during the Trump administration, says he's trying to assemble a group of investors to buy TikTok, the video-sharing app popular around the globe. But as NPR's Raphael Nam reports, Mnuchin's task won't be easy.
TikTok is not even for sale, but it's sure attracting a lot of interest. Citing national security concerns, the House on Wednesday passed a bill looking to ban TikTok unless its Chinese owner, ByteDance, sells a social media app. The bill needs to be approved by the Senate, however, and even if Congress did pass the bill, it would likely face big legal challenges. Nonetheless, Mnuchin, in a TV interview, said he would love to buy TikTok with other investors.
It should be sold. It should be controlled by a U.S. business. It's a great company. It would be terrible if it would shut down.
But ByteDance has said it's not interested in selling TikTok, and the company denies it poses a threat to national security. Rafael Nam, NPR News.
U.S. stocks end the day lower. The Dow closed down 137 points. From Washington, this is NPR News. The Michigan father on trial in connection with the mass shooting his then 15-year-old son committed at school is waiting to learn if he will be convicted of involuntary manslaughter. James Crumbley's wife was convicted last month on similar charges. The case against them are the first of their kind. Their son, Ethan Crumbley, is serving a life sentence for the 2021 shooting that killed four students. A new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine finds colorectal cancer can be detected with a new type of blood test. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports if the FDA approves this test, it would be another tool to detect the cancer at an early stage.
The study finds the blood-based screening test detects 83% of people with colorectal cancer. The test, developed by Guardant Health, can be done from a simple blood draw and detects cancer by analyzing alterations in fragments of DNA. Dr. Barbara Jung, president of the American Gastroenterological Association, says if approved, the test could help improve early detection.
I do think having something where you can just do a blood draw versus undergoing an invasive test will reach more people.
Though people with a positive test will still require a colonoscopy. At a time when colorectal cancer is on the rise, many adults have not been screened for the disease, despite recommendations that regular screenings should begin at age 45. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
The Dow's closed down 137 points, ending the day at 38,905. It's NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include ECMC Foundation, working to improve higher education for career success among underserved populations through evidence-based innovation. Learn more at ecmcfoundation.org.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Davis Hovey. It's 12:06. Good afternoon. Today is the governor's veto deadline in a wide-ranging education bill that contains the first significant increase to the state school funding formula in years. And the Alaska Beacon reports lawmakers and Governor Mike Dunleavy have not reached an agreement. Legislators would convene for a joint session to consider an override as soon as Monday, according to legislative leaders, if the governor vetoes the education bill today. Senator Bill Walkowski, an Anchorage Democrat, said he had good meetings with the governor on Monday and Tuesday nights, but there has been no agreement, and he does not know what will happen. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, said the governor's attempt to move control of charter schools under the state school board and away from local districts is one of the biggest issues the caucus has with the administration. Dunleavy has also cited a teacher bonus incentive bill and issues with funding related to reading as reasons for a potential veto. Lawmakers overwhelmingly approved the education bill, Senate Bill 140, and could override a potential veto if all legislators voted the same way. A few legislators who voted for the bill have indicated they may support a gubernatorial veto. The bill would become law without Dunleavy's signature if he takes no action this week, but even if that were to happen, he could veto funding for the bill when he is presented with the budget later this year. The school in Yuzinki is at full staff for the current school year. Yuzinki's head teacher gave the school's annual presentation for the Kodiak Island Borough School District Board of Education at its meeting earlier this week. The district struggled to keep teachers in Yuzinki last year, but now has a new pair to lead the elementary and secondary students. The head teacher, Estella Bryans, is in the middle of her first year teaching and living in the village. In her presentation, Bryans listed a new refrigerator as a top need for the school and said it would help preserve perishable foods like milk for the students. The current refrigerator is likely unable to be used again. Bryans also asked the district to clear some overgrown brush near the school building. She said she's concerned that bears could hide in the brush as kids are playing during recess. School board members talked with maintenance staff to address both issues during the meeting. Usually, the district would rely on the Alaska ferry system to bring supplies into Yuzinki, but the Tustamina is on break for the winter, and district staff said they're looking into other options. As spring weather approaches and the snow continues to build in the backcountry on Kodiak Island, conditions are prime for avalanches. This week, the Alaska Avalanche School will be in Kodiak to provide classes for residents who want to be safe when recreating in avalanche areas. Chris Bruno, one of the instructors with the Alaska Avalanche School, formerly lived in Kodiak. Based on his experience recreating in the mountains around the area, most of the hazardous conditions are wet wind slabs, which include a harder layer on top of a weak layer in the snowpack.
I think that's a lot of what you're going to get in Kodiak, just because it's the storms come in warm, the snow is heavy and wet, relatively speaking, as opposed to, you know, other places in Alaska where you might get really cold storms with low water content snow, so fluffy snow as opposed to heavy snow.
To be better prepared and more knowledgeable of avalanche conditions on Kodiak Island, Bruno recommends residents take the school's local course. According to Bruno, 25% of avalanche fatalities are due to injury from debris, while the vast majority of deaths are caused by asphyxiation. Bruno referenced the fatal incident south of Anchorage last month where one backcountry skier died in a human-triggered avalanche.
Like, the goal of avalanche education, we do spend time using the tools for rescue, and we do spend, like in the level one, we spend a whole day teaching rescue. So what to do with your beacon, shovel, and probe if somebody in your party gets buried in an avalanche. But a lot of the curriculum is more focused on, hey, how do I make good decisions in the backcountry to avoid getting in an avalanche?
There is no avalanche forecast center in Kodiak, so people recreating in the backcountry have to use their own knowledge and evaluate local conditions when in avalanche areas. Steve Wilebski is president of Kodiak Island Search and Rescue. He says prevention and being educated about potential avalanche conditions is the best way to avoid having to call search and rescue.
We're pretty lucky in Kodiak. We have a very stable snowpack, a maritime snowpack, and that means it's got a lot of water in the snowpack, and so it tends to stick pretty well to the mountainside. But there are occasions due to the climate and the weather and the storm cycles that we do get avalanches.
Wilebski says so far this year, there have only been a couple small avalanches on Kodiak Island, but nothing major resulting in injury or fatalities. To sign up for Bruno's class this weekend in Kodiak, go to the Alaska Avalanche School's website, alaskaavalanche.org. KCAW's Catherine Rose is on assignment in Japan this week, where she's looking into the industry and culture of herring. Today, Rose tracks the herring to an early morning wholesale auction in the city of Otero, where in a lightning-fast process that lasts under 4 minutes, buyers stake their claim to thousands of boxes of hatchery-produced herring, all of which will be processed and retailed in Japan.
This is KCAW reporter Catherine Rose, and it is early, bright and early in the morning. And I'm at the local fishing wholesale market in Otaru in western Hokkaido. Yesterday, I spoke with gillnet fishermen as they weighed and packed up their herring for auction. Early this morning, fish buyers started inspecting those fish. Over 1,600 boxes of herring are in this warehouse. And the buyers want to get the highest quality herring for the best possible price, so they're really taking a close look at these fish. But there's some luck involved for the buyer. Anthropologist Dr. Shingo Hamada, the herring researcher I'm traveling through Japan with, explains.
So, and also this area, they do not separate female and the male herring. So in this box, they, we see both female herring and the male herring. Mm-hmm. So that even though the buyer examined each box and hoping that they'll get the more female herring because they'll get the Kazunoko, but and also they'll get the male herring, uh-huh. which the buyer could will not have a Kazunoko.
Right.
But mixing both female and the male herring together, the price per box increase. Mm-hmm.
At 7 a.m., the bell rings and the auction begins. And just a few minutes later, at 7:03, it's over. And buyers with forklifts and trucks start hauling the fish away. The warehouse empties quickly. These fish are going to go to restaurants and grocery stores around the region, or possibly south to larger markets like Toyosu in Tokyo. But all of this fish is going to stay in Japan.
Again, that was KCAW's Catherine Rose reporting from a wholesale fish auction in the city of Otaru in the Hokkaido region of Japan. Rose's trip is a project of KCAW and the Alaska Center for Excellence in Journalism. In other news, humpback whales are often considered a conservation success story. The species was near extinction just 50 years ago. Today, tens of thousands of humpbacks call the North Pacific home. But climate change may be stunting the species' recovery. As KTOO's Anna Canny reports, a new study using artificial intelligence shows that Alaska's humpback population has dropped more than 30% in a decade.
Wildlife biologist Janet Nielsen has been keeping a close eye on Alaska humpbacks for nearly three decades. For the National Park Service, she keeps a count of the whales that migrate up from Hawaii to feed in Glacier Bay and Icy Strait each year. During the summers between 2014 and 2018, she noticed something was off.
Calves went missing. We had whales in the prime years of their life go missing. And we certainly had some older whales go missing as well, but it really seemed like it hit all the whales.
Nielsen is a co-author on a new study, which finds that almost 7,000 North Pacific humpbacks went missing between 2012 and 2021. Naturalist Ted Cheeseman is also a co-author on the study. He's the founder of Happy Whale, a photo database that uses artificial intelligence to quickly identify individual whales by the unique black and white patterns that mark the underside of their tail fins, or flukes. With Happy Whale, Cheeseman originally set out to do a simple population count.
When we first saw those numbers, it turned a population study into a climate study.
That's because the database showed a sharp decline in humpbacks that coincided with the blob, which spiked ocean temperatures from Alaska to California between 2014 and 2016, killing fish, seabirds, and more than 30% of Alaska's humpbacks. climate change may complicate the species' conservation success story. Back in the 1990s, Cheeseman was working as a tour guide in Antarctica, and he says humpbacks were hard to come by back then.
We didn't see many whales at all. We did, however, visit some of the largest whaling stations that were ever built. You know, they're factories, absolutely factories to turn living whales into product.
Commercial whaling pushed them to the brink of extinction. But since it ended, their populations in the North Pacific have boomed. Humpbacks were even taken off the endangered species list in 2016. But around that same time, researcher Heidi Pearson was seeing the whales around Juneau get skinnier and skinnier. Pearson, who researches humpbacks at the University of Alaska Southeast, says these whales are usually more adaptable than other marine species. They can travel long distances to find food, and their diet is flexible.
And so the fact that they still declined due to what we think is lack of prey, even though they are so flexible, means that it must have been really bad.
Pearson says she still believes in the resilience of humpbacks, but the species is clearly feeling the pressure of warming driven by the burning of fossil fuels.
I really learned a lot about the fragility, actually, of the ocean system to this warming. I mean, animals and systems are resilient, but clearly during the heat wave, they reach this tipping point.
For Nielsen in Glacier Bay, the decline emphasizes the need to protect humpbacks, even when their populations seem healthy. Humpbacks are also frequently threatened by ship strikes or entanglements in fishing gear near the coast.
It's important to realize that the whales that we do see out on the water these days are survivors of a major ecological disruption. And those survivors deserve great protection because more heat waves are coming.
And as those heat waves come, technology like Happy Whale helps researchers to track the surviving humpbacks faster and more thoroughly than ever before. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Four women dog mushers have finished in the top 10 of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, the most ever in the 1,000-mile race's history. Alaska Public Media reports Paige Drobny's team arrived in Nome in fifth place yesterday morning, followed by Mila Porsild in seventh, Amanda Otto in 8th, and Jesse Royer in 10th. It's Drobny's highest Iditarod finish in 9 races. She commended the other 3 women in the top 10, but she said the fact that they are women isn't as important as it is that they're great people and great dog mushers. While finishing up some chores in the dog lot yesterday, she said that even if she hadn't signed up to be anyone's role model, she could see how her success in the Iditarod might be an inspiration for women and girls.
I think it's great to have people that can inspire other people to do things. Like anything that gets people up and outside and excited about something. And so I like appreciate that there are, you know, yeah, that I can be that for some people, and that's really cool.
In 2019, Drobny had joined Ali Zirkel and Jesse Royer in the top 10 by finishing 7th, her highest until now. And that was also the first time in race history there had been 3 women in the top 10. This year, it was Amanda Otto who broke into the top 10 as the 4th woman. Royer has finished as high as 3rd, doing so in back-to-back years, 2019 and 2020, and she had hoped to do better than she did in this year's race. But like Drobny, Royer said the gender of the mushers doesn't matter much to her. She hopes the message she sends is that anybody can accomplish difficult things if they try hard enough.
Nothing is out of reach. If you want it, go for it. You have to work hard for it, but go for it. You know, that's the thing, is too much of our society tell, like, you can't do that. You're a girl. You shouldn't do that. Or, you know, you need to, you know, you're not good enough. No, don't listen to anybody. If you believe it, you can do it. You know, just work hard, believe in yourself, and go do it.
A teenage girl who many Iditarod mushers, officials, and fans think will be following in the top 10 women's footsteps is Emily Robinson, the 3-time junior Iditarod champion who was in the finish chute yesterday to see her father, Wally, finish the Iditarod. Robinson said she was happy for Drobny, Porsild, Otto, and Royer.
I think it's awesome that women are consistently getting into the top spots and just proving themselves. And we've proven ourselves for a long time, but, you know, to just continue to do that, I think is incredible.
Robinson said she plans to run the full Iditarod at some point. Meanwhile, as Iditarod sled dog teams continue to arrive into Nome, there could be as many as 7 women finishing in the top 20 if the positions of Josie Teer in 15th, Jessica Klaika in 18th, and rookie Gabe Dunham in 20th hold to the finish. For KMXT News, I'm Davis Hovey. Have a good afternoon.
The Federal Reserve is looking for signs that it's time to cut interest rates. It saw the opposite signals today. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. Economic data shows the labor market remains resilient, inflation is still elevated, and consumer spending is strong. The producer price index for February, a measure of the prices businesses pay, which can later affect consumers, showed a gain of 0.6% month over month, mostly thanks to rising fuel prices. Retail sales during the same period grew 0.6% as well at gas stations, but also at department stores, which showed a 0.4% gain. Restaurants gained 0.5%. And initial jobless claims, a proxy for layoffs, last week remained low at 209,000. Meanwhile, the count from the week prior was revised down significantly. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
And here is your Island Messenger for today, Thursday, March 14th. Thanks so much for joining me on KMXT. I'm your host, Davis, filling in for Terry Haynes this week. The sun rose at 8:26 this morning and will set at 8:13 tonight. That gives us a total of 11 hours and 46 minutes of daylight, a gain of 5 minutes and 1 second since yesterday. The record high for this day was set in the years 1967 and 1968 at 49 degrees. The record low was set in 1966 at 1 degree below zero. Taking a look at the current weather conditions here in Kodiak, at the Kodiak Airport, it's 29 degrees with fair skies. Wind is northwest at 13 miles per hour. Visibility is 10 miles. The rest of this afternoon, forecast calls for sunny skies and a high of 33 degrees. West wind will be 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming light later on. Tonight, around the island, increasing clouds and a low of 26 degrees. Calm wind becoming north around 5 miles per hour after midnight. Going into tomorrow, though, just a heads up, it looks like a chance of snow showers is on the way again, and that will continue through Friday and into Saturday and Sunday. Keep your eyes open for that. Let's go over to marine weather forecast. Here's a synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters. A 996 millibar North Pacific low, 40 nautical miles west of Yakutat, has moved inland, and the front of that 990 millibar North Pacific low will enter the Gulf by Friday morning, that's tomorrow, and reach the northeastern Gulf Coast by tomorrow afternoon. The front sweeps to the western Gulf through Saturday afternoon. From Marmon Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. Today, west wind at 20 knots, seas 5 feet, freezing spray. Tonight, southwest wind at 15 knots, seas 6 feet. And on Friday, northeast wind at 15 knots, seas 7 feet. For Chiniak Bay today, west wind at 15 knots, becoming variable less than 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Tonight, variable wind less than 10 knots, seas 2 feet. And on Friday, variable wind less than 10 knots, becoming north at 10 knots in the afternoon, seas 3 feet. In Marmot Bay today, west wind at 20 knots, diminishing to 10 knots this afternoon, seas 4 feet, subsiding to 2 feet in the afternoon. Tonight, variable wind less than 10 knots, seas 3 feet. And on Friday, northeast wind at 10 knots, seas 3 feet. In the Shelikof Strait today, southwest wind at 20 knots, seas 5 feet, freezing spray. Tonight, southwest wind at 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And on Friday, northeast wind at 15 knots, seas 3 feet. And taking a look at your tides for today. In the Kodiak District, we just had a low tide before noon, so the next high tide is at 6:01 p.m. at 7.03 feet. On the west side of the island, on Larsen Bay, the low tide just happened a few minutes ago at 12:18 p.m., so the next high tide on the west side will be at 6:26 p.m. at 12.25 feet. Let's go into community announcements. In case you missed it earlier, here on KMXT, our HD stations are back online. Thank you for your patience while we worked through the issues. I had to wait on new equipment and eventually figure out how to get everything back up and working again. Big thanks to Paul Van Dyke and KMXT staff. Good old Mike. Happy listening to KMXT on HD2, HD3, HD, and KODK. Senior citizens of Kodiak are in need of paper bags. Please make sure they are not torn or soiled, and you can drop off any paper bags you have at the Senior Citizens of Kodiak Center between the hours of 8:30 and 4:30, Monday through Friday. Thank you. Tonight, the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District is hosting a community garden meeting. That's from 5 to 6 p.m. at the KFRC building Touch Tank on Near Island. If you need that address, that's 301 Research Court. They'll be meeting in the main meeting room, the Touch Tank, of the KFRC building. The community garden meeting features bed prepping methods, seed starting, garden planning, work party, and cleanup planning. If you want more information, contact Ian Zacher. His number is 907-486-5574. Again, Ian Zacher, Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District, 907-486-5574. The Kodiak Island Borough has a few public meetings coming up. Today includes the assembly work session. That'll be at 6:30 p.m. tonight at Assembly Chambers. Also this week, I guess going into next week, I should say, is a Solid Waste Contract Committee regular meeting. That's on March 19th at 1 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room. Also on March 19th at 5:30 p.m., the Women's Bay Service Area Board Budget Public Hearing. That'll be in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. Also on the 19th next week at 6:30 p.m., Service Area Number 1 Board Budget Public Hearing in the Borough Assembly Chambers. On the 20th next week at 6:30 p.m. will be a Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting. That's in Borough Assembly Chambers. And on the 21st next week, a week from today, is the next Borough Assembly regular meeting. That'll be at 6:30 p.m. in Borough Assembly Chambers. The state champion Kodiak Shakespeares will present their annual drama showcase at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium Drama Pod this week. The five-time champs in drama will perform their dramatic and comedic pieces in this two-hour showcase of the best young actors and speakers in Alaska. You will laugh, you will cry, and you will be enlightened. This will be the public's only opportunity to watch the performances that earn the Shakespeares another state title. The next opportunity and the last opportunity is tomorrow, Friday, at 6:30 p.m. Tickets will be available at the door, and again, that's at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium Drama Pod. The Kodiak Public Library has a few things going on this week slash weekend. Tomorrow, Friday, is the library's video game club that will meet at 3:30 p.m. for ages 13 and older. The Pokemon Club meets on Saturday, March 16th at 1 p.m. Please bring your own card sets, and that's for patrons in grades 1st through 8th. Then next week, the second annual FanCon returns, March 22nd and 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days at the library. There is something for everyone at FanCon, from cosplay to video games, trivia, and more. Stop in or call the Kodiak Library for specific times for panels and events. FanCon is free to the public, no registration is required, and it's open to all ages. And one more thing from the Kodiak Public Library, they have an escape room open. Sessions are Mondays and Fridays, so the next one would be at 3 p.m. tomorrow, Tuesdays at 6 p.m., and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Patrons under 14 must be with an adult, and this is only open for groups of four or less, so if you're interested in the escape room, call or stop by the Kodiak Public Library to sign up. Join the Kodiak Arts Council for a meet-and-greet music event with the Barbara Leica Quintet at the Islander Bookshop this Saturday, March 16th at 8:15 p.m. That is a free meet-and-greet music event this Saturday. Following their concert on Sunday, which we've been announcing all week, there will also be a community outreach event with Barbara Leica on Monday at 10:30 a.m. in the Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room. Barbara Leica is backed by her Juno-nominated band, and they'll be showcasing her songs and stories behind them, followed by a 5 to 10 minute Q&A session. Both of those meet-and-greet community events are free and open for all ages. For more information, go online to kodiakarts.org. And finally, a grief recovery method 8-week grief group is meeting in Kodiak, hosted by Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak. This is an opportunity to learn effective tools for how to process feelings of pain and loss, while also learning how to live with grief in a manageable way. This will be done in an interactive and supportive environment with grief specialist Juliana Belden. Classes begin next week on March 21st, that's a week from today, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Providence Medical Center. Pre-registration is required if you want to participate in this grief group. Register at www.hpck.org. Or you can call 907-512-0600. Again, that phone number, 907-512-0600. Thanks for listening to today's Island Messenger on KMXT. Coming up next, our spotlight.
The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings.
On Wednesday, March 13th at 6:30 p.m., Planning and Zoning Commission is having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers. On Thursday, March 14th at 6:30 p.m., the Borough Assembly is having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers.
All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.